Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined every week by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, you know, the football sectional openers tonight, volleyball sectional started this week. Virtually no, there are no IU or Purdue football to talk about this week, but, you know, we still got plenty to talk about.
Oh, there's, Joe, we're in the midst of the beginning of the state playoffs. We've got soccer, both boys and girls in the state of Indiana, going to the semi-state round. There's a ton of stuff, but you know what? When it gets cold like this, when it gets cold like that, this and the breeze starts blowing a little bit, that cold wind, I can smell that leather basketball starting to bounce in those gyms and people sliding on the floor and loose balls and everything else. But it's not there yet. It's not time for that in Indiana. Not quite yet. But we do have a lot to talk about, and we might start a little bit, Joe, before we get into all the football and stuff that's going to be going on and the volleyball that started up last night around the state. We might just start a little bit with the World Series tonight. Joe, I know that you are not a big fan of either team, nor am I, but let's face it, we're based out of the Midwest, and we have a ton of St. Louis Cardinal fans, and the series is knotted up at 1-1. Not a bad job in Boston. Waka did not disappoint last night for the Cardinals, and Big Poppy has not disappointed for the Red Sox. As I said, the series is knotted up 1-1 after some sloppy first game play by the Cardinals. Uncharacteristic. You would have thought the world was falling apart, Joe. You would have thought that there was a cataclysmic disaster going on as I followed on Twitter and on Facebook the St. Louis Cardinal fans turning on their boys pretty quickly in that game.
Oh, it was with the Cardinal freaks that live in this house, it was a disaster, and they were freaking out. But you know, looking at that play at shortstop that really, you know, just kind of started the avalanche. I mean, what was the umpire doing there, Coach? What was he looking at?
Well, I understand all that, but I guess I'm just a little shocked at how Cardinal Nation, as they like to call themselves, the second coming of the New York Yankees, as they are starting to chant. I'm just kind of shocked at how they started turning on their team and sloppy play and what would Tony La Russa do and all this other stuff. And all I got to say is the Cardinal fans are like anybody else. They when they're riding high, they're riding high. And when things start to turn a little bit, they jump off just as quick.
Oh, yeah. It was quite a display, because I mean, you know, especially being a social media junkie like I am, I read a lot about the Dodgers this, the Dodgers that. You know, you got to stay classy and got to do this, got to do that, and they kind of went off the deep end there. You know, kind of.
They absolutely,
you know,
did, Joe. But that's human nature. As I've always said, we are a fickle lot. Speaking of Dodgers.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Dodgers, we've got a little bit of soap opera going out in Hollywood land and with Don Mattingly, a manager that has done a pretty good job with the Dodger organization since he's been there as both a bench coach for hitting coach for Joe Torre, and now the manager for the last 3 years. He's a winning record. He got his Dodgers into the playoffs. They won their first round over the hapless Braves when it comes to playoff time, and was rewarded with his bench coach being fired and what seems to be only a one-year contract, although now Stan Katzen is saying that they'll talk a little bit more after the World Series. If you're Don Mattingly, and he says he's going to stay because he signed a deal that said if they picked up his option You know, he would be under contract. So he says in the paper, at least, that he's going to stay. But he did throw some shots at him. And I've got to wonder, too, why a one-year deal? Obviously, he's not their boy at this point.
For the turnaround that he had over at, you know, with the Dodgers this year, you'd think that he'd be a god, and the 1 year contract kind of is we'll wait and see. We're still not sure about you, you know. And I don't know. What do you think? What is your opinion on the contract?
Well, I think they're flat telling him that we're not completely convinced that you're the guy to lead us. At least over a 3 to 5 year period. I thought it was very interesting when Coletti, the general manager, and Mattingly met the press, and Coletti, he just stayed right in the middle, man. He wasn't going one way or the other. Obviously, job security is important. And Mattingly, you know, kind of made some comments for our listeners who didn't hear it. He made several comments, and one of them was that he was happy with his coaching staff. And he didn't see any reason for a change in any position. Now, was he coming out and saying that ahead of time because he knew they were going to fire his bench coach and he was trying to create this, at least this look that he was supporting his people, knowing already that they were going to fire him? I mean, to me, it's a normal Hollywood script. You know, hey, you guys go out and deflect this, and we'll be working on this behind. Make it look like that management is the problem, and what are you doing to me, and I like who I've got. And then 24 hours later, Joe, they fire his bench coach, who he just said 24 hours before, I'm really happy with these guys, and I think we should all stay together. So to me, was this set up behind the scenes to happen, to help Donnie save face, or was this something to say, listen, Don Mattingly, as quickly as he goes, you could go. I don't know. I know we love Don Mattingly. We respect him. He's a great player, a solid individual, and has been a solid coach. And I think he's got the values that say I'm going to do a great job and I'm a man of my word and all those other things. But they fired his bench coach. I don't think he had any input in it. If he did, well, then that's not the Donnie Mattingly I know. Because that means that he was doing it behind the scenes and saying another thing out front in front of the cameras. And I know people out there will say, well, Coach K, that's just business. No, not with Coach K. Who you are in front of the camera should be who you are behind it. Who you are, your yes is your yes and your no is your no. And so I'm not saying that that's the case, but if management went ahead and fired his bench coach after Don Mattingly gave him a voice of confidence, that would tell me, if I was in Don Mattingly's position, that this is very tenable, that I may not be in as good a situation as I'd like to be in. And the other thing that concerns me is the reports coming out that they're looking to put a bench coach with Don that can help him in late game on the field decisions. What?
Yeah.
On the field decisions? He needs a bench coach who can help him do that. I'm not saying that your assistant coaches don't help you. They absolutely do. I've had some great assistant coaches over the years and some that weren't so good. But in the end, the head coach, the manager, makes that decision. So that's another thing that makes me think, okay, I'm an injury short of being a Hall of Fame player. I've had success as a manager. I worked under one of the finest managers in Joe Torre, and now you guys are questioning after 3 years my ability to make on-field decisions, especially late in the game. I don't get that. I don't get that. I don't know how much Magic Johnson and rest of the owners have in this decision-making. I do know that they would probably like a more L.A.-type guy. And Donnie isn't that, but maybe Donnie shouldn't be that. Maybe there's only one Tommy Lasorda out there. Maybe Don Mattingly is exactly what that team needs with all those high-priced, over-the-top players they have. Maybe he's exactly grounded, even keel, middle of the road, baseball focused. Maybe that's exactly what they need in L.A.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you're saying about him. And, finding him a bench coach would help with decisions, you know. I don't know. I mean, what would you have done when you were a coach if they said, Coach, we're going to hire you an assistant coach to help you make decisions?
Well, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, I would have felt like they don't have much confidence in my ability to do the job. And obviously there were people that didn't at different times. So, but that to me, you're the head coach. You put your staff together unless there's a holdover when you come in that you just have to take. Now, unfortunately, on the high school level, you don't get that opportunity very often. You come in, this is what teaching positions we have, this is what volunteer. These guys have been here for 10 years. You got to keep them. But on the professional level, you usually get to come in, and on the college level, you usually get to come in and put your own staff together. So I think for Donnie, Don Mattingly, unless there's something more behind the scenes and he was just playing a part in a PR script that they had to put out there, I think he's got to wonder. I was surprised the Reds didn't come after him, and maybe they did. We never know who the agents are talking to. And speaking of the Reds, we have a number of Reds fans that listen. Joe, what did you think about the hiring of their manager, the former pitching coach, Price, as the new manager of the Reds?
Well, from what I did read about it, I mean, some of the people that I saw comments from, because I have really no comment on it, seemed fine with it. I don't know. It'd be nice to know someone like Luke Holes, Jeff Cochran, you know, diehard Red fans' opinions on it. But, sometimes I've always been a very loyal person, but I don't deal much with pro sports as far as that goes, as far as promoting within, you know. So what do you think about it?
Well, I think that he was a known commodity for him. And, you know, maybe we can get Jeff on next week and get some input from him on it. But I'm a little surprised by it. I thought there were some other people out there that are tested, that have been through it, that they could have brought in. Obviously, Don Mattingly is one of the guys I thought might be a great fit for him. On the other hand, Walt Jocketty is pretty good when it comes to picking people from players to coaches to managers, and maybe they saw the type of personality that they needed. Maybe they liked the fact that he was a pitching coach background and that they've got to really have a strong pitching staff. They've got the arms right now. There's no doubt about it. And maybe they felt like, you know, he had some things that he wanted to do that Dusty overruled while he was there. Maybe they felt like, their big Cuban wasn't being used right, and maybe some of the other arms weren't being used right, and maybe that was just Dusty's decision the new manager, Ray Price. But it'll be interesting. I was a little surprised, but again, they know what they've got there, and maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe they didn't want a big break in the flow. They feel like they're right where they need to be. They just need to up their game just a little bit, and finding a new power hitter would help the Reds a lot. Hey, before we go to break, we've got a few minutes left. Let's jump over to high school volleyball in the state of Indiana. And, of course, we'll start right there in Jasper, where Joe's at doing the show, the head coach of the ladies, women's, girls volleyball team at Jasper High School, is none other than Liz O'Brien Milligan. And Liz, Coach Milligan, started off her first sectional as a head coach with a victory in the opening round.
Yes, she did. And, you know, as she always is, she came home with all the things they could have done. And I said, hey, you got a W, you know. That's the most important thing right now, right? It's a single elimination. Got to get the W.
Well, as a coach, but as a coach, you're always looking to see what you can do better. Joe, you know that. You've been there on some of the lower grade levels. But surviving and advancing at tournament time, that's all that matters.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Hey, I got before we also go to break, I've got a quick basketball question for you. I know this is a football show.
Oh, I love those. Go ahead.
But I got a question. I was on the other day, football game. I saw Coach Gable, Jasper's coach, and talked to him just for a second. And he informed me, like, basketball doesn't start officially till November 11th, practice-wise. Their first game is the 26th. Now, with the IHSA's rule changes where they've got a little bit more, you know, freedom to be with the kids, you know, is it not that important that they're going to only be getting, what, 15 days before that first game? Or why is the IHSA moved back the boys' basketball start of practice back yet again a week?
Well, that's a real simple answer, Joe. It's called football. It's called football, and you've got soccer, which will be done a little bit sooner. But football, when you look at how the football tournament runs, you've got 2 or 3 weeks just of sectional games. So you're sharing athletes, at least you should be. You know, Indiana, regardless of the Indianapolis schools and maybe some of these schools up near Fort Wayne or something, the majority of the schools in Indiana share their good athletes, and they should. And I think, Joe, what you're seeing is a result of the expansion of the tournament, adding more. They added an additional regular season game a few years back. You have to push that forward. You cannot have such an overlap. The other thing that I think about that is the IHSAA kind of followed what college was doing, and the NCAA had started to push the start of the basketball season back. And now the IHSA has gone the other way. The NCAA has gone the other way. Go figure it. The NCAA now is moving the college basketball season up as far as when you can start practice. I mean, they've already been in practice for a couple weeks. And Indiana, when I first started coaching, if you were a non-football playing school, you could start the 1st of October. And I remember getting married, going on a quick honeymoon, and right back and starting basketball practice. My wife, Janet, has always wondered what was more important, the honeymoon or starting basketball practice. We won't go there, though. But I think what has happened over time, the football playoffs have expanded. You've got tennis. You've got soccer. You've got a number of sports that have grown in popularity as far as numbers and the tournament is concerned. They push themselves out a little bit further into October. So you're dealing with a lot of kids who would overlap into basketball. And you don't want players to be torn between all those sports. And coaches, let's be honest, coaches would like to start sooner. But when you start sooner and you're waiting on your football players or your soccer players or your tennis players, there's not a whole lot you can move on to. Now, some of the relaxed rules with the IHSA in the early part of the year allows you to maybe get some things in with some of those kids. They go on to their other sports and then come back and jump back in. But it's a long answer for a short question, Joe, but it really takes a long answer because it's a combination of things. But mostly it's the expansion and popularity of the football playoffs on the high school level here in Indiana. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Joe's going to be talking with the Hall of Famer from WITZ, Walt Ferber, about the Jasper-Harrison IHSA football matchup tonight. This is basically IHSAA Indiana Football Tournament Friday. It begins this weekend. We'll be back. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Ubelar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles. Cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories. And they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
All right. Now, I don't want them to gain another yard.
You blitz all night! And if they cross the line of scrimmage, I'm going to take every last one of you out. You make sure they remember forever the night they played the Titans.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by WITZ play-by-play man for the Jasper Wildcat football team, Walt Ferber. Walt, big game tonight. Evansville Harrison, opening of the sectional. Of course, at this point, every game is big because it is single elimination. And before we get into that, give us a little overview on the Wildcats and their game against Mount Vernon.
Well, you know, it was about business as usual. A little lackadaisical getting out of the gate, kind of almost like they were early in the season against Evansville Memorial, as Mount Vernon scored on their first drive, and then Jasper ripped off 42 consecutive points. When they turned it on, they did everything they were supposed to do. Nolan Aarons had another great ball game. He set the all-time single-season passing record for the Wildcats in that game, breaking the record of his older brother, Austin Aarons. And, you know, and we did it well on the ground. We had some of our people bunged up a bit, but a nice win for the Wildcats. And I don't think we necessarily played as well as we could in that instance, but we played well enough to take care of business. And, you know, anytime you can get through the regular season 8-1, that's pretty good football.
Yeah, 8-1 season. I talked to Coach Aarons yesterday, and you know I'm sure you, as always, they love 9-0, but 8-1 because he said he really liked how his team has had a little adversity this year and has faced it and has come back stronger than they were before.
Yeah. You know, it's the next guy up comes in and gets the job done. And I think that, from what I understand, practice has been kind of hard this week. And I do know when Coach gets them out there hitting hard, they hit as hard as any football practice, high school football practice I've seen anywhere.
Now the Evansville Harrison Warriors, 1-7 on the year. I didn't look at their schedule real close, but apparently they must have had a bye week. Must have had someone cancel out on them. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Wildcats should expect on that offensive side of the ball for Evansville Harrison?
Well, I tell you what, they can score points. And they've had a hard time finishing games out. They were ahead of Memorial at halftime, I think 35-7, ended up losing that game. They put up 40 points against Castle. They were ahead of Bossie in the first half, ended up putting 40 points up in that game and a loss. So these guys can score points. They have athletes. They were hurt when sophomore Ryan Hales, their quarterback, broke his collarbone in practice before the Evansville Memorial game. But when he went out, they moved Lawan Rollins, one of their wide receivers, over to quarterback, and he's given him kind of a different look. He's been, I think, more problems with his feet than his arm. But they have, as you can expect when we play Evansville Harrison, they have some athletes. They have been able to put points on the board. And I'll be honest with you, Joe, it's a kind of deceptive 1-7 team. I think if we go in and do what we're supposed to, we'll be fine. But this is a team that played Castle tough, came within a point of beating Evansville Memorial. this is a team that if they get on a roll, they could knock us out of the tournament.
Now, yesterday talking to the coaches too, Coach Eckert, one thing that he said, which didn't surprise me, seeing how my son runs track, was they've probably got 7, 8, 9 guys faster than our fastest people on our team. And and speed's always a great thing, especially in any football, especially high school football. But have you seen much or heard much? Their defense has seemed to have given up a lot of points. Are they young over there, or an aggressive attacking type defense that gambles a lot and doesn't pay off for them? Or what exactly are we expecting to see from them on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I think numbers are a problem. Coach Brunson has better numbers. He got the numbers up to 50, and I think with injuries now they're going in at about 43. It's what you get. I think they have speed, but I don't think they've had a lot of guys that have hit the weight room a lot. And I think in the second half they have had a tendency to wear down. So, I mean, they've had some great first halves against some teams, but, it's hard for them to keep it up in the second half. I don't honestly have my lineup card in front of me, but from what I remember, they've got probably 4 or 5 guys that end up going both directions. I think in the second half, they just basically end up tiring out. I think they're getting better in tackling, but they're probably not the best tackling team we see. So they have allowed points, and I'm looking here, they've allowed 63 points to Wright, Central, and Castle. 51 points to Modern Day, so they have scored points, but they've also allowed points also.
And, just shifting gears from Jasper for a second, we haven't hit much on the Forest Park Rangers this year, and, I know that you guys cover them. You don't, specifically, but didn't know if you could – do you know who they're playing tonight, who they match up with in the first round?
They have the daunting task of going to Enloe Field, and they're taking on 2A top-ranked Evansville Modern Day. So Rob Spoos did not get any favors out of the IHSA office in Indianapolis. About their team, they're playing better. They had some studs that went on to the next level. They got Ben Broniker that's playing for Harvard. You probably got 6 or 7 of the graduates that are playing college football somewhere right now. And they're in a rebuilding mode. Ross has got them in the weight room working hard. And they're getting better, as in evidence just a couple of weeks back, them getting the upset win over Heritage Hills. So Ross has got them playing better. But, to be honest about it, it is going to be a daunting task for Forest Park on the road tonight, taking on top-ranked Evansville Modern Day.
And, also Walt will be on. What time is the game? 7:30? You'll be on, what, 7:10?
Well, we'll be at Bob Lovell. We'll start at 6:50, and Coach Gilbert and I will be on the air at 7:05.
Okay, 7:05, and don't miss his special halftime guest. He's got a special halftime guest tonight. So
my halftime guest, you know very well. And I tell you what, she did a very, very good job. And Liz Milligan, the volleyball coach, is going to be on halftime with me tonight. And I do want to compliment her. And I know, Joe, you guys kind of have a volleyball family. She's done a tremendous job with this volleyball team. We got a big win over Washington last night, semis and finals tomorrow. And I certainly want to see everybody out at Jasper Gymnasium and root on the Wildcats, hopefully, for another sectional championship.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, Walt, thanks a lot for being on the show, and hopefully we'll be talking to you next week where we'll be discussing the winner of hopefully us playing the winner of Silver Creek and Evansville Central, I think, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yep. Okay, well, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, and you've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
For those of you who may not know, this is the final resting place for six members of the 1970 Thundering Herd. The plane crash that took their lives was so severe, so absolute, that their bodies were unable to be identified. So they were buried here, together. Six players, six teammates. Six sons of Marshall. This is our past, gentlemen. This is where we have been. This is how we got here. This is who we are today. I want to talk about our opponent this afternoon. They're bigger, faster, stronger, more experienced. And on paper, they're just better. And they know it, too. But I want to tell you something that they don't know. They don't know your heart. I do. I've seen it. You have shown it to me. You have shown this coaching staff, your teammates. You have shown yourselves just exactly who you are in here. When you take that field today, you've got to lay that heart on the line, man. From the soles of your feet, with every ounce of blood you've got in your body, lay it on the line until the final whistle blows. And if you do that, we cannot lose. We may be behind on the scoreboard at the end of the game, but if you play like that, we cannot be defeated. And we came here today to remember. Six young men. And 69 others. Who will not be on the field with you today. They will be watching. But they'll be gritting their teeth. With every snap of that football. Do you understand me? How you play today, from this moment on, is how you will be remembered. This is your opportunity to rise from the ashes and grab glory.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. This is the Coach, Ken Schulteis, and that was not the whole re-airing of the We Are Marshall movie with Matthew McConaughey, but pretty close. Great speech in the locker room, especially on Football Friday, the start of the sectional tournaments here in Indiana. I think Joe got caught up emotionally in that speech, and we almost aired the whole show. I hope we don't have to pay any residuals on that. Next up, we've got my favorite and good person to the show, Chris Goodman, to talk about SIAC football and what's going on in the IHSA playoffs. Chris, to have you.
Hey, you know, that's way too kind of you. And by the way,
I have two movies at my desk that I have a DVR that I have just in case I'm sitting around. I have Rudy and I have We Are Marshall, those two movies. and I watch them.
How ironic, and you know, especially with the speech in the locker room by Matthew McConaughey and you got to lay it on the line tonight. You got to go out there and play with heart. It helps to have some talent too, especially when it comes to football. But we are in the beginning, the emotional, the physical, the mental, everything comes together tonight for teams as they start the football playoffs in Indiana.
Absolutely, and I think if you don't do that, then you're going to be one and done. You know, it doesn't even matter who you play because it's a new season for everybody, and everybody wants to get that one playoff win at least under their belt, so I think you're absolutely right.
Chris, I think the interesting thing about tonight, I do think it's hard in football to pull upsets. It's better now that the classes, you know, we're in classes here in Indiana as far as numbers and players and that's concerned. But one thing that we add into the ingredient tonight that our kids haven't really had a lot of at this point, the teams, we've got a lot of cold weather now. And a lot of the teams have been playing in what I call unseasonably warm weather early in the year, mild weather to start it, and now we've been plunged into what could be cold weather in the 30s here in the southern part of the state. Other than the fact that you have to announce these things and you used to have to run around with a camera in the cold, the snow, and the rain, does this have a little effect on these players not really having been through this kind of temperature?
You know, I think that it definitely stings a lot more, you know, when you get hit on a cold night, and it takes a little longer for your body to kind of heal, you know, when you have one of those stingers or when you have a bruise or you have any kind of aches or any kind of lingering injuries. So, yeah, I think in a way that I think when it's like this that it's a little harder to get warm. It takes a little bit longer for teams to kind of get going and get into the flow of things. And I think the coaches do a great job of warming up the kids and doing a lot of exercises before, you know, as you see, they run through quite a few plays and they'll stretch out and everything like that. So I don't think it'll affect people too much. It's not like it's going to be absolutely freezing out there. I think it's going to affect the fans like you and me more when we're sitting in the stands trying to figure out where we're going to get our next cup of hot cocoa.
And, you know, the one thing that I always worry about in the cold weather is the, at least in the beginning stages when you're not used to it, is the handoff from center to quarterback, quarterback to running back. Guys have to have their hands ready. They're not going to have the feel, the moisture that they normally have with those hands. They got to be ready to feel that ball when it comes into them.
Yeah, and I think the quarterbacks are going to I don't think they'll intentionally put less zing on the ball, but I think there will be a little more touch passing going on, you know, if that happens, if receivers drop the balls, you know, a couple of times, and then maybe they, you know, pull off the trigger just a little bit and throw it a little softer. But I don't anticipate that happening too much. You know, a lot of our teams are running teams, and they establish the ground game first, and in the majority of the high school teams, I think, in this area are run first, pass later. So I think teams like a Castle that doesn't open until next week that passes the ball a significant amount of times, I think you might see that with them a little bit more than maybe some of the other teams.
Yeah, you got to grab that ball and hold on to it. Let's talk about some of these games. Right now, the way I look at least the teams in the Evansville proper and Castle, of course, doesn't open up yet, but Wright takes on Owen Valley, Central against Seymour, Harrison against Jasper, Pike Central against Bossy, Heritage Hills and Memorial. I really only see one team from Evansville in a situation where they're going to have a tough time winning, and that is Coach Brunson's Harrison Warriors. Otherwise, Owen Valley 5-4 against Wright, Seymour 0-9 against Central. Bossy takes on a very, very, very mediocre Pike Central at 1-8. They don't play a tough schedule, and they're not very good to begin with. And Heritage Hills, which has struggled at 2-7. Let's start with Jasper and Harrison. Coach Brunson was in the Evansville Courier today. He was looking for upset. I think that Harrison definitely has the speed and the skill to do that. But here's the struggle I see, Chris. They cannot put two halves of football together. They have led in a number of games this year at halftime upwards of 2 and 3 touchdown scores and cannot hold on to seal the deal in the second half.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a lot of evidence that would tell you that Harrison's going to be capable of beating a Jasper team tonight. I know that's the thing for a coach. You want to get your team motivated and get them fired up. And you never want to doubt, you know, the heart of anybody because it certainly could happen on a given night that one team could upset another. But I think it's very, very unlikely given the resume that Harrison's presented so far this season. Like you said, when they've had leads, they haven't done that well. They've scored a lot of points, and there's definitely – I think Coach Brunson has done a fabulous job, and I think that team has improved. They're scored a ton of points. I think he's getting interest in the football program again. But whether they're going to be Jasper or tonight, like tonight, I don't think that's probably going to happen. You never say never, but I think Jasper's just going to grind it out, wear them down, and come second half, like you said, I think the Wildcats are going to kind of pull away just because they've got the experience. They're bigger. They're probably stronger, and they've got more invested in their football program, at least to this point right now. So I think that's the big thing for Harrison. It's a tough hill to climb. Whether you can pull that upset this year is probably not going to happen.
And I look at two things going into this game. One, the idea that Harrison could pull this upset, the only possibility lies in the fact that they have speed. They have a lot of speed. And Jasper has really not faced this kind of speed all year. Mount Carmel, of course, gave them a loss over at the Snake Pit, but they just really haven't faced this kind of speed. So I do think that Harrison does have some opportunity to take advantage or catch some of the Jasper defense off guard with that speed. But on the other side, even though Jasper may be missing one of their fullbacks, they pass the ball a lot more. Nolan Ahrens has over 1,600 yards passing, I believe, this year for a school record. So Jasper is not the one-dimensional team that they've been in the past, even though, and I'm not going to go against the Jasper tradition, they will run the ball. But they are a two-dimension team this year.
In the postseason, you see Jasper just really – I mean, I just remember the years watching Luke Smith pound out and Lewis pound out yard after yard. And they – even when they could pass, they didn't necessarily – when they had Mock, I mean, even when they could pass, they didn't do it as much because they wanted to keep the ball on the ground. And these are some Jerry Brewer coach teams as well. But Jasper kind of goes to that run game. But like you said, you know, when I saw them against Boonville, they could obviously throw it. They could put the ball in the air. Ahrens has a couple of good receivers that he throws to, a good tight end. So he can obviously hit some of those guys for big passes when need be. Now, my thing is they're going to probably run it and make Harrison stop them running before they quit running it. That's just kind of the way I see it. And one of the telling things, I was looking kind of down the schedule for Harrison, they lost 63-7 to Wrights. Now, when I look at the Wrights-Jasper potential matchup, I think Wrights could struggle with Jasper, and I think that could be a very close game, and I think Jasper's probably the favorite of that game. So how can you lose to Wrights 63-7 and think that you're going to be in the same game with Jasper? It just doesn't add up for me. Hopefully Harrison's got that program. They're going to turn the corner. They're going to get better. But I don't think this is obviously the point where they need to be to beat the teams like Jasper that are tradition-rich, that are built on strength and running the ball and doing as well as they do in time possession. I think those are just key integrals of the Jasper Wildcats offense. And to beat those teams, you got to have more than just speed.
And I would absolutely agree with you. And I think, if nothing else, the fact that Harrison does not have a number of bodies on that sideline that you need to go through a long season and a grind-out game. If I'm Jasper and I get that lead, I'm going to grind that ball on the ground. I'm going to work that clock. I'm going to wear their guys out, and it's going to make the big play, the big scoring drive, the opportunity for that much greater. Numbers matter in football, and Jasper has those numbers and Harrison does not.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely, and I think Harrison's a couple of years away from getting those kids invested in the program and turning them around. I don't think it's a situation like Gibson Southern where Nick Hart comes in and he gets interest in and you get half the school wanting to play football. I don't think it's like that at all. I think there's some several years that they got to kind of backtrack and get kids invested back again in the football program where they're playing basketball, track, or baseball or what have you be. You know, that it, I think it's just going to take a little while for Brunson to get that turned around. But same said, I think he's managed to turn that program around to a point where they're scoring some points. They scored 40 against Castle. They scored 41 against Memorial. So, I mean, they obviously have got the offense to a point where they're on track. Now, whether they can get that defense turned around, that's the big question. They're scoring points, but they're not slowing anybody down.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris, and they just can't put two halves together. So I see Harrison maybe scoring some points early, but struggling to score points and stop points late. And I see Jasper getting that lead and going to just grind out and work that time down and get out of there and get ready for the next game. Let's jump down to 3A sectional 32. I think there's a lot of interest here because I think these teams are interesting. You've got Bossy 5-4 playing at Pike Central. I think Bossy's going to win that, and I think they're going to win it big. The game I like to at least look at a little bit is Memorial Heritage Hills. This is not your typical Heritage Hills team at 2-7. Memorial's 2-7, and Memorial, you look back 4 or 5 years ago, and they had two straight trips to Lucas Oil. Since then, they've struggled to be 500. But, and I say this but big in this particular sectional, I think they go into Heritage Hills, and I know Heritage Hills got some guys back, but they still haven't performed at that level. Forest Park, who has struggled, beat them. I think Memorial goes in there and wins that game 2 or 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think Memorial probably has the edge in that game, but Heritage Hills being at home, they're trying to turn their program around. You got to think that the Patriots, in that situation, they want to turn the program around. The kids that are seniors don't want to lose their first game and be done. They're playing at home. They've got a lot of tradition there, so they want to be part of that tradition. So I think Heritage Hills could actually potentially pull an upset. I think Memorial has the talent and the experience probably to beat Heritage Hills, like you said. I think they're the favorite on paper, but I think that game could be a lot closer than what people think. Now, with that said, I think either of those teams emerging could be a potential upset winner. But I, you know, looking at the playoffs and looking at the way it works out, the winner of that game is probably going to get Gibson Southern, so it's going to probably be, no matter who wins, it's going to be a tough out to beat the Titans.
Yeah, and my feelings on that, Chris, are simply that I think Memorial, when they have gone up against teams whose defenses are not strong, and I mean they're not able to really make you earn your points, I think McKinley Warren and Chesley at quarterback, they put some points on the board, and I just don't know if Heritage Hills can contain them and come back and score the points they need against not a great Memorial defense, just a good Memorial defense, really. And Gibson Southern will probably be waiting in the wings for either one of them, and I give Memorial the best chance at pulling an upset against Gibson Southern, and the only reason is simply Memorial has played a much stronger schedule, and Memorial has been close. They really haven't been in a position to win those games, and they lost them. They were usually had to come back and made it close and had an opportunity to win. I just think that they're in a better position to move forward to that 3A final game of these two teams we're talking about. Bossy, 5-4 at Pike Central. I like this Bossy team. Again, I just worry about their ability to play defense.
Yeah, and I think the Bossy-Gibson Southern matchup on paper, if that were to happen, that would be an absolute shootout. And I think the way it's set up, it looks like that's a great possibility because Bossy's got Pike Central. They're 1-8. Their only wins against Forest Park. So, I mean, the Chargers haven't won much. I think Bossy's going to win that relatively easily tonight. Then they got the winner of the Princeton-Mount Vernon game, which I think both of those teams are down this year. So I think Bossy's going to kind of cruise in those first two games. Now, is that lack of competition going to hurt them when they run into a Gibson Southern team potentially on down the line? I think that's one thing that – and I'm looking ahead. I know coaches aren't supposed to look ahead, but that's okay, broadcasters do. do. So I think Gibson Southern and Bossy matchup is kind of something that inevitably I think we're going to see. I don't think there's always a guarantee in playoffs, but I think just looking at that schedule, it just looks like that's glaring out to me, the Bossy-Gibson Southern matchup. I think they cruise against Pike Central. They have a great offense. I think Memorial Heritage Hills, to me, I don't know if it's a two-touchdown game. I think it's kind of a coin flip since Heritage Hills is at home. I think Memorial probably edges them out at the end and then plays Gibson Southern. And then I think Gibson Southern is going to be a tough out no matter who they play.
And then we look at a game that won't take place until November 1st, and we'll talk about that when it comes up. But Terre Haute North, who really has had a strong season at 7-2, obviously Castle played them early in the year. What do we make of this Castle team? Are they just a little maybe too young to be able to pull this off, or is this team improved enough to be able to match up with North?
I think you hit the hammer on the head when you said they're too young. I think Terre Haute North, I think they might play better than that loss they had earlier in the season at Lucas Oil. They lost 44-14 to open the season to them, and I think they'll play better. Can they win that game? I don't think that they'll be able. I mean, you never know. High school football, you never know. I think Doug Hurt does a tremendous job, but I think this team's just a little too young right now. I don't think it's their year. I think anybody that has a 6-3 year on a down year, that's pretty good. So I think Castle is up and coming. I think the next couple of years they're going to be pretty strong. I think they're going to have really good football teams. If not next year, I think the year after that, they'll, you know, when some of these sophomores become seniors, I think they'll be loaded, and I think they'll be back in form. But is that this year? I don't think the answer to that question is yes. I think they're going to struggle against Terre Haute North. They're going to play a little bit better than that game they lost at Lucas Oil. But I think that's a tough, tough game for them in the opener.
Okay, and 2A, Modern Day, of course, is going to take on Forest Park. Oh, Forest Park has to come down here. They play the number one team in the state, a team that's hitting on all cylinders right now. It's going to be a cold night at Enloe Field for the Rangers, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they're 2-7, and they have certainly struggled. Modern Day has not struggled. We saw them last week against Wrights in the Westside Nut Club Trophy, and their defense was just fantastic. I can't imagine that Forest Park will be able to score too many points on Modern Day if they score at all. I think Modern Day could be in the potential shutout game tonight, and I think they're going to score a lot of points. Nolan Gable was injured last week, their main running back. He was banged up. He only played a half and then sat out the second half, I think, in preparation for the sectionals. But I think there's a situation here. Modern Day has a couple of good backup runners, Logan McCann, Forsley we saw last week with some big carries, that I think Nolan Gable could potentially sit this one out. Modern Day could still win comfortably and move on to play the winner of Sullivan and South Spencer.
Well, no matter what, if he needs time to heal, they need to let him heal, because he is critical in their march towards a state finals opportunity. And it, you know, 2A may look easy in the early rounds, but it'll get tough as you go forward. You know, Chris, I'm going to jump you back to 4A, and I'm sorry for jumping you all over the board, but you can. You know, we talk about Jasper, we talk about Wrights. Where does Central fall into all this? They've got an outstanding running back, a decent quarterback. Is it just the lack of defense that makes us think that this Central team can't win this sectional?
You know, I think they can win the sectional. I don't think it's probably the first pick you would think. Given the bracket, they got to play Seymour. They're going to win that game, barring something miraculous on Seymour's part. They're 0-9 coming into the contest. And then they got to face the winner of the Jasper-Harrison game, which will most likely be Jasper. And I think if they could somehow upset Jasper, I think they could certainly beat Wrights. That was a close game in the first contest, and those two have historically battled back and forth and had close games year in and year out. Actually, it was 48-28 Wrights. But still, I think Central was very well capable, if they can beat Seymour tonight and then move on and somehow upset Jasper, I think they could upset Wrights. I think that's something that could certainly happen. I don't think the Bears I think their lack of defense could certainly hurt them, but at the same time, I think their offense is so prolific that I think they can outscore people on a given night. If they've got a great runner, Avion Sullivan, I don't know if you've seen him. He's just a spectacular athlete, gets a lot of yards. They have a good quarterback. They got Austin Fuchs, and I think they've got the weapons on offense. They say defense wins championships. But certainly, if you can outscore teams, then I think you could win. And I think that's one of those things. You were talking about Harrison versus Jasper and the speed that might be a little scary to Jasper, that Harrison has a ton of it. Well, Central has that and more. They have that, and they have, you know, some good skill kids and a decent defense that is kind of coming on here late in the year. But obviously, that's not their strong point.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to see all these teams at least one time, and they do have some outstanding skill players. I really think that when you look at a lot of the teams in the Evansville city proper, there are some solid skill players. What we don't see on both sides of the ball are those grinders, those guys that control the line or control the end zone area when the teams are making a drive. It just seems like there's some solid skill players. Central certainly has them. If you have not seen Central play, they're strong, they're quick, they're big, and their running back is solid as can be, and a lot of teams would love to have him. You know, Chris, I think it's going to be interesting. I think some of these first-round games are not going to be indicative of how these sectional tournaments may play out in the end, but we are in tournament time, and you got to be excited. You got to be focused. You have to have your game ready to go. And as we heard in the pregame speech on the We Are Marshall, you got to have heart. You got to lay it on the line tonight.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing about the opening of the playoffs is it's one and done. You get off to a bad start if you're a team like a Central. You get off to a good start against a Jasper team, you know, deep in the playoffs, and you might win that game if you get enough points in the early start of it. Or if you turn it over, it could kind of go the other way. You know, if you turn the ball over two or three times in the first quarter, the first half, certainly any team is capable of mustering an upset if you continually turn the ball over to other teams. So I think you're absolutely right. You've got to come to play tonight, and if you don't, you might go home. You might finish the season, you know, be one and done in the playoffs.
Well, Chris, great having you again. We'll talk to you again next week and see who's moving on and who's saying goodbye until next year. Always happy, always wonderful, always informative to have Chris Goodman.
Always great to have you on the show. Hey, thank you very much for having me. I always enjoy talking football. There's nothing better this time of year, and I'm looking for some really good games tonight, and hopefully all the kids are safe, and we do it again next week.
Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking some Indianapolis area football with Bill Somm. We'll also talk a little bit about the newest, first USA Today preseason college basketball poll, which was released. Most of you around here probably know who's number one. And I can tell you one of the teams that's not in the top 20, at least in the USA Today preseason poll. When we come back, we'll talk with Bill Somm, Indianapolis area football. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
You all know what you have to do. Remember, no one, and I mean no one, comes into our house and pushes us around. This is your game now, gentlemen. And for you seniors, it's your last one, so make it count. Because you'll remember it for the rest of your lives. Let's get a fight.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You're talking to the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis, and he's right. He's right. You will remember the last one that you play, seniors. So the seniors listening, I can remember mine back in 1981. It was against Ligoti in the regional semifinal, and we squandered a big lead. So I do remember that. I also remember the last one we won, which was a sectional championship. And we're talking sectional playoffs here in Indiana for high school football, and we have the original. There's no one like him out of the Indianapolis area. Bill Somm to talk Indianapolis area football with us. Bill, great to have you back on the show.
Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I am a little bit better because you have now come on the show.
Well, we're lucky that you're feeling better. I'll tell you what, sunshine in Indianapolis is going to be a crisp evening, but it's a beautiful day, and I think there should be good crowds at all these sectional games in the area. The wind will be low, so it won't be a freezing night in regards to a bone-chilling night, but it'll be crisp.
You know, Bill, I asked a question of our last guest, Chris Goodman, but you probably have even more insight on this, having coached and played. And on a night like this, when we haven't had this really cold weather that we're getting now, and it's not bone-chilling, as you said, but it's going to be colder than what these players have been used to. They have had practice this week, but a lot of guys anymore, they'll go indoors on things, especially in the larger cities where they can do that. As a coach, are you talking to your kids about getting the handoff, making sure they're ready for the ball, their hands aren't quite as they don't have the same feeling in them? I mean, is there any adjustment for these young men on a cold night like this that they haven't been used to playing into this year?
Well, Coach, I think it's an interesting point. I don't know that you spend a lot of time on it, but early in the week you certainly address it. I know Coach Dreyfus at Cathedral has the weather report on Monday night when he comes into films, and they sit down and talk about how they should dress. They talk about mentally how to prepare for that. And then this week, I think for all the players, at least in this part of the state, they experienced all week really rougher weather than they're going to experience tonight, because most of Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it was rainy from about that 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock hour. Certainly, I think you spend more time with your kids about mental preparedness in regards to the weather, and I think it has to be a little bit more in depth than just saying ignore it, because you can't ignore it. You know, you gotta think twice about the handoffs. You gotta think twice about looking the ball in, and certainly you will see the kids that are not quite as mentally tough probably dropping a few balls tonight.
And Bill, just a quick question. And again, none of these things are going to change. You know, both teams have to play on the field, so it doesn't matter unless somebody's not used to it. When you go from a natural turf field, natural grass ground, and you go on to the artificial, does the weather have any effect on the playing surface at all as far as warm to cold, that type of thing?
Well, I think there's two items. I think it does make a big difference for a team that practices every day on turf to go to a grass field and play. I think it has a big impact mentally on 15, 16, and 17-year-old kids. The weather itself, I think, of course, we'd all like to play on turf. You know, it doesn't get quite as slippery and slidey. There's obviously no mud. The water leaves immediately. All those turf fields drain unbelievably well. So I think on a cold, crisp night, everybody still would rather play on turf, because that sod just keeps getting harder and harder. And in most school systems, we don't quite have the money to keep those fields up to date over a 10-week season. So they're pretty ground down at this point.
All right. We look at the last Indiana AP poll in 6A. We've got Penn, Ben Davis, Center Grove, Southport, Fishers, Carmel, Maryville, Warren Central, Indianapolis Pike, and Hamilton Southeastern. Let's start in the 6A sectionals, Bill. I know there's a lot of teams in that Indianapolis area that are part of that 6A. Talk to us about some of the games or some of the teams that need to be ready to play or need to begin their march towards Lucas Oil.
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting 6 weeks from now to see if Ben Davis is sticking around. Ben Davis has collapsed for the last couple of years near the end of the season, but you know what? They've had a great run this year. They really have. They seem like they are playing together as a team. Obviously, I've always felt they've been well coached, but for some reason or other, they've collapsed. But they stand at 7-2. They play Avon, and I think you're going to see Ben Davis roll over Avon tonight. Now, if they roll tonight, then I think they may be on quite a run. So I think that's going to be very, very interesting. However, you know, you have Pike sitting there in that same section on number five, but I think Ben Davis is the one to watch. I think in sectional six, that's become a little bit clearer as the season's progressed. I mean, it's really almost sad for Lawrence Central. They've lost six straight. They're 3-6. They're really, really, really struggling offensively. They've only averaged 10 points in the last six games, and they're just really struggling. They don't have a quarterback, and they're just not being able to survive the loss of their quarterback. So I think Warren Central is hanging in there, and I think that you're going to see them pop back, which is interesting because they have a brand new coach and they struggled early. In sectional seven, that's an exciting one for people that just love newness to a sectional. You know, you have Southport at 9-0. They haven't won a sectional championship since 1990. They've never in the history of the school been undefeated. So now, can they manage this greatness that they've experienced this year? And they play Prairie Meridian, which, as everyone knows, is in their own backyard. They share the same stadium. Prairie Meridian is 5-4. Southport won the first game. We all expect Southport to win it again, but how will Southport handle their success? And then finally, in Sectional 8, I think everybody's looking at Center Grove. They're a really, really good football team. I think you can probably jot them down. The one that's a little bit precarious to figure out is Sectional 4 with Carmel. You know, Carmel's been on a bit of a roller coaster this year. They've been up in a couple games, and they've struggled near the in games where they're even up 21-0. But I think at the end of the day, folks are kind of expecting Carmel to come out of that Sectional 4. Carmel plays Hamilton Southeastern tonight, who's 7-2. It's really the only two ranked teams in 6A that are playing, I think, this weekend. So those are the games that we're finding of interest up here.
You know, let's jump back to this Southport. You know, you talk about a team that hasn't seen any success in the tournament since 1990. I mean, that's a long time ago. You know, from your experience as a football coach and being on the sidelines and in the locker room, and how does the coach it's hard to pull on some tradition or bring some people in who have been there for South. How do they mentally prepare themselves to go in the tournament and say, you know, this is our time?
Well, Coach, you actually know the answer to that. And in the Southport situation, we both know the head football coach there, Billy Peoples. And the answer to that question with Billy's football team is that this has been a six-year process. You know, Billy, I think, won two games in his first 2 years at Southport. And he has just stayed with those young men. The administration has stayed with Billy. The kids have stayed with Billy. The parents have stayed with Billy. And I believe in my heart that they're fully prepared to handle this 9-0. Now, the question is, you're still playing with 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds, and you're still playing with a ball that can go any which way at once on a Friday night in front of 7,000 people. But this has been a six-year process, seven-year process for Billy Peoples and that squad. And I believe that he has developed them mentally, spiritually, and physically. And I think those kids are prepared. If somebody just starts doing that at week 7 when you're 7-0, then I think the whole thing's going to fall apart. But you know, those kids have been working out for the last 12 months. They started last December after they got beat in the playoffs last year. So it's an ongoing process. Every day, in season and off season, and I think those kids are. I'm hopeful that for at least another couple of weeks, those South Fork kids are going to experience something special.
And it should be an exciting time for them. And I'm sure Coach Peoples is doing what we both would do, and that is let's do something that's never been done, or at least not been done that anybody can remember. And you know, sometimes it's great to draw on tradition as a coach. I love that. I mean, I did love that. Usually that meant we had something going ourselves. But it's always a wonderful feeling to accomplish something that hasn't been done for a while or never been done. And I can't imagine young men, at least if the skill level's there and they've done their job and they're focused, not wanting to say we were the first ones to do this in this many years or the first ones to do this ever. It's quite a banner to hang up, and it's quite a feeling to have as you go through the rest of the year.
It absolutely is, and again, what a great moment for these young men. You know, there's young men at Southport that take 30 and 40 and 50-minute bus rides to practice. And there's some young men that come from some very difficult backgrounds. And no matter how this season concludes, I think they have an A-plus season to put into their backpack and carry around, not only for the rest of the year, but they're going to be the kids that get to come back to Southport per your earlier comments in the next 3, 4, 5 years and say, hey, here's how you handle it. So it's a great moment for Southport.
You know, Coach Bill, you brought up something that a lot of people lose sight of, especially fans. You know, when you run a program, whether it's football, basketball, tennis, whatever it is, and you've got kids that are either being bused or having to drive 30 and 40 minutes, and there's a lot of schools left in the state of Indiana, a lot of rural schools or outside the urban areas. People think, you know, well, they're a big school, the kids are right there. They're not. They come a long way. And it's tough, one, for them to get there, two, for them to be student-athletes, three, for them to get the support of a community that's spread out all over a county or all over part of a county. I think it's quite an accomplishment, and I think it's much more difficult than people really understand. I applaud the coaches who have been able to come in and build programs where kids have to come a long ways, because we know kids today, Bill, even with cars, they'll drive that car somewhere else instead of to practice.
Well, that's absolutely correct, and that's why those coaches and those kids deserve so much credit. And you know what? What a great life lesson, though, because when you're in those situations, you got to worry about your sleep, you got to worry about your eating habits, you got to worry about your off the field behaviors. When winning teaches things. I've never been a real big guy on believing you can learn a whole lot through losing, but when you get a thing going like the Billy Peoples has at Southport, I believe that those young men will be changed for the rest of their lives, because they have found that if they hang their hat on 3 or 4 core values, that it actually will work if you're really patient.
And, you know, Bill, that's why I love when I talk with you, because we have a real understanding of the guts of the sport, more than just on the field or on the court. You know, to get your kids in, to get them to buy in, to get them to be selfless, to get them to be a part of the team, to get them not to listen to mom and dad are great, but to get them not to listen to mom and dad when it comes to the things they have to do as players and teammates, to make sure they have enough gas in their tank to get to practice, to make sure they're getting the right food. You know, people don't realize there are a lot of good young men and young women today in sports. They battle every day to just have enough money to get a meal, to get gas in their cars, to get them where they're supposed to be, or even to find a ride. You know, sometimes kids are like adults. You know, they've got pride, and they may say, oh, I don't want to play, and it might be because they can't get a ride there, or they can't get enough support to be there every day, or it's a battle in the classroom, outside the classroom. There's a lot more things going on in these young people's lives that you have to bring together in order to win as a team. Maybe not all individuals, but a lot of those individuals, especially in football, because it takes a few more to win as a team. People forget that.
That's well stated. And a quick aside with one of your earlier comments in this particular section, I sometimes feel the biggest enemy to team unity and the coaching staff is the kitchen table, rather than the opponent of the week. What we as parents need to do is bite our tongue, and we need to be supportive unless there's something horrendously outrageous going on, because our kids have got to understand that there's lots of ways to skin a cat. And just because I'm not getting the ball quite as much doesn't mean that coach is wrong. So I've always kind of questioned that old kitchen table in regards to team unity and working with the unity of the coaching staff.
Stick to a good meal and how's school going and those other things, and just make sure that they're focused and ready to go, because it's a lot of fun come game time. Let's look at 5A. 5A poll, AP, as far as the AP was concerned, Westfield, Terre Haute North, Whiteland, Fort Wayne Snyder, Cathedral, with a lot of respect at 4 and 5. The pollsters still have a lot of respect for them. Martinsville, Mishawaka, Concord, Fort Wayne North, and Munster. Take us through those important sectionals in the Indianapolis area in 5A.
Well, we'll look at Section 13 with Indianapolis Cathedral. And interestingly enough, now we can be pretty efficient in this part of the conversation. There's only two football games in 5A this weekend, Coach, across the state, because everyone else is sitting out a week because of the numbers issue. And I should have mentioned, in 6A, those guys are going to sit down, I believe it's the week before the state championship game for their bye week. So you have Cathedral playing this weekend. They play Decatur Central. You know what? That's a trap game for Cathedral. Decatur Central has got to believe they can win that game. Decatur Central has an outstanding quarterback. He was offered by Iowa last week. He's very elusive. They have a big old offensive defensive lineman. At the end of the day, even though it's cool temperatures, I think what may impact this football game is that Decatur has multiple individuals going both ways. In fact, their starting quarterback's also a free safety. So it's going to be interesting. I think Cathedral will prevail this evening. But you know, that's a tough sectional. They have Zionsville in there and a couple other local schools. In Section 5, I think the two teams that we have to figure out at the end of the day is Westfield and Terre Haute North, and that's who we need to figure out. How far can they go? How equipped are they to get down the line through the sectional at this point in time? But Class 5A is a little bit light this week because of all the buys.
And then we go jump down into 4A. We've got Columbus East, New Palestine, New Prairie, Indianapolis, Chittard, Leo, Jasper, of course, Roncalli, New Haven, East Noble, and Mount Vernon of Hancock County, which ends up being the AP poll, or this past AP poll in 4A. Talk a little bit about 4A, Bill.
Well, 4A is interesting. Remember, Chittard has bumped up. They're now in 4A. They've commanded 3A for many, many years. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come out of Section 22. I think they will come out of there over Roncalli. Roncalli just doesn't have it all put together even now. New Powell is very, very good in Section 21. Mount Vernon is probably your second choice in Section 21. They have a very good coach in Doug Armstrong and made it through a couple of sectionals into the Cathedral game last year, but New Powell really does have it rolling. And you have Columbus East in Section 23. You know, they're always there. Now that Cathedral is not in their sectional, let's see what they can do. Greenwood should be some good competition, but Columbus East has that great running back, and it's going to be kind of fun to see how he's matured over the past year and see if he can carry Columbus East as they get into a little bit more tougher competition as they come outside of their regular season.
Now, when you look at that overall in the 4A and at least in that part of the state, we'll stop going past Columbus. You've got Columbus East, New Powell, and Chittard. Of those three teams, Bill, based on what you know, what you've seen, and what you've heard, who do you see coming out as the best of those three teams?
Well, here's the challenge I have in answering that question. I have come over the years to believe that in high school football, if you have a Division I athlete at a running back or quarterback or wide receiver, it's very difficult for you to lose. And Columbus East has a very, very good running back. Now, having said that, we all know in this state Chittard's great tradition. So I'm not ignoring New Pal. They're a good football team. They're sound. But it's between Chittard and Columbus East for me. My gut tells me it's going to be Chittard because they've just been there so many times, and they're so mentally tough, and they're physically tough. And what they've done is they throw the ball a little bit this year, which they haven't done a whole lot in the past, and they're decent doing it also. I think it's a toss-up between Chittard and East. I'm kind of going against my own philosophy about the Division I running back at East, but I'll take Chittard because they've been there since the creation of time, it seems like.
Bill, before we let you go, let me ask you, I can't let you go without asking about your son Zach and Cathedral. How are they? Is everybody healthy? They played just a tough, tough schedule. They're not afraid to go out of state and play the best teams. And the respect they get in the polls at 4-5 obviously shows that. Just give us a quick update on Cathedral and where they're at before we let you go.
Well, in all honesty, if I was not a Cathedral fan, I would probably be frustrated that they get to be ranked when they're 4-5. But I had a conversation with the head football coach last night because we were at parent-teacher conferences, and I shared with him that, you know, it gets frustrating when you go to Trinity and Moeller and X and you sit there and say, well, golly, should we be playing these guys? And, oh, they're so tough. Because as coaches and hardcore parents, you really don't want to rationalize. But it was kind of funny because I told Coach Strife last night, I said, you know what, I feel today exactly like I did last year. I'm really happy we played Trinity and X and Moeller and Ben Davis and Warren Central, because you know what, when they go out and play Decatur Central tonight, I even asked Zach about this. I said, I bet instead of the game speeding up, I bet the game slows down. And I bet it just all seems a little bit more manageable. And, I think that schedule really does prepare them. Now, we're going to see. This is not a great Cathedral football team by any means. If Cathedral High School wins the state championship this year, I would simply say that it's Rick Strife's best coaching of his entire 24-year career. The defense is very suspect. They have great young men. They have great coaches, but there's no Division I athletes over there. And they just battle and battle and battle. But, the offense can score points. They got a 6'6 quarterback who's very good, Barthel. They have Terry McLaren, number 25, who will sign at Ohio State University, and in my opinion, one of the greatest high school players ever in Indiana. I mean, he is just special. He's got such great foot speed, and if people get to watch him, I would just say watch his first three steps. There's lots of people that can outrun people over 40 yards. Terry turns you into a knot in his first two or three steps. We got a really good center, James Officer. We got a really good tackle, and he's a junior. And I think Purdue's coming to the game tonight to watch some of those younger kids. So we'll see. It's going to be a journey for Cathedral High School. It's exciting because it's the first time in 5A. Just winning tonight will be the first win ever in Section 5 or in 5A. So it's a good time at Cathedral. It's beautiful up here for all these high school kids. And the tough thing is you lose, you go home. And that's half of us will go home tonight. It's just we all hope it's the other half.
Exactly, and it's a great night and a great time to do something you've never done before, and Cathedral has a chance to do that in 5A, at least starting out this tournament run, this playoff run. Bill, thanks for being with us. As always, we'll have you back to see who won, who lost, and who we can look forward to going forward.
Have a great weekend.
Will, stay warm, Bill. When we come back on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the first USA Today preseason top 25 college basketball poll, and I'll also tell you whose birthday it is. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. Let us know if you know. You can text us or Facebook us or whatever you might want to do or call into the show. We are the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubilar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubilar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubilar & Sons Chevy, Cadillac, and Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here is Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe show. This is the Coach, and in just a minute, we're going to have Joe, and we're going to get into the mailbag for the week. Obviously, Coach Gate does speak the truth, at least my truth. Real quickly, let me run down some of the other volleyball scores. Of course, the sectional started in Indiana, and we want to make sure we do touch base on some of the teams. Castle moves on, defeating Central. Vincennes Lincoln defeats Mitchell. Heritage Hills defeats Southridge. I think that was on Tuesday. Jasper, of course, Coach Liz Milligan's Wildcats won over Washington. Mount Vernon of Posey County defeats Evansville Memorial. That was quite a matchup. Mount Vernon Wildcats move on. Boonville, always a strong volleyball program, defeats Princeton and moves on. Eastern Green, North Knox also wins. Perry Central wins. They've got a solid program. Modern Day, outstanding in their victory. They've also got a great program, and they all move on in volleyball. Before we went to break, after talking with Bill Somm, I threw two things out, and that was the USA Today preseason top 25 coaches poll for college basketball, and also whose birthday it was. And if you were quick to jump on Google or whatever, today, and Don Schulteis, our contributor from Indianapolis, who will be on to rant with us at around 11:30 or so, he let me know, because he knows that I definitely have a lot of respect for this man. The general, Robert Montgomery Knight, great basketball coach in Indiana, at one time the all-time winningest coach with 902 victories. It is his birthday, so we salute the general. October 25th, he was born in 1940, a native of Ohio, just a great coach. Whether you like how he coached, whether you like how he talked to the media, and he did say some outrageous things, he could coach basketball. I attended practices. I saw games. I didn't always agree with him, but I liked a lot of his philosophy. When it came to defensive style, Coach Knight really changed how college basketball played defense man-to-man. He ushered in the physical play that a lot of us are unhappy with today because it's gotten too physical. But his IU teams learned how to get over the top of screens, learned how to screen, but defensively get over the top of them, bump their cutters, get in the passing lanes, bump anyone flashing to the ball. He had a great impact on the game of basketball. He especially had a great impact at Indiana University with three national championships. And before the Indiana coaches were paid $2 or $3 million a year, Coach Knight was paid much less, and most of the money that he brought in went to the university to support the library and different things like that. So happy birthday, Coach Knight. Not always agreed with, not always supported, but you definitely got the job done. Okay, real quickly, top 25, USA Today, preseason poll, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the rant. Who's number one? You guessed it, Kentucky. Coming off a 21-12 record, USA Today poll says they are number one, followed by Michigan State, Louisville, reigning national champ, Duke, Arizona, Kansas, Syracuse, Florida, Michigan, our runner-up, Thad Matta's Ohio State Buckeyes. Boy, I love the way he does things. North Carolina, Oklahoma State, Memphis, Gonzaga. You will not see Indiana until number 24, and that might be a gift based on last year. Wisconsin, Notre Dame, UCLA are in the top 25. Connecticut, Oregon, Marquette is in there as well. And when we get into the rant section of the program, we'll talk a little bit more about that top 25 preseason poll. Let's take some mailbag if we got them, Joe.
We've got them. Okay. First one comes from Kenny in Evansville. Did you ask this question?
It wasn't me.
Okay. Will anyone compete with Harrison in basketball this year?
I'll tell you what. Harrison has got just an outstanding team. Of course, they've got the trio of the Duncan brothers, but they've also got some solid players around them. Coach Spears does a nice job. I don't know that anybody will compete with them game in and game out in the regular season. I think the struggle comes for the Evansville teams at tournament time because they don't play a wide range of schedule. They don't see a lot of teams north of Bloomington. And I think sometimes we get shocked when we play those teams by their athletic ability and some of their individual skills that match up quite well with the best teams coming out of Evansville. But with Jaquan Lyle not at Bossy, Bossy will have a good team, though. Memorial will be much better. Central will be better. But still, and Wrights has a nice club, and North has some talent. But if you take the total package, it'll be tough if this team is mentally focused and prepared, and I think the Duncan brothers will make sure that that does. Remember, there's three of them. I think Harrison will be tough.
Okay, next up, Mark from Jasper. Do you have an upset special for tonight?
You know, I don't really see anybody that I think is going to get upset. Chris made some good points about Heritage Hills, but I really don't see them beating Memorial. I think Memorial has to be the favorite in that game. I do think that Harrison may surprise Jasper a couple times in the game, possibly in the first half, but I do think Jasper gets that lead, grinds it out, and just wears Harrison down. So, no, I'll be honest. I don't see any upsets in this first round of football games in this area. Now, could Harrison get the lead and somehow hold on? I just don't see it. I just think Jasper on both sides of the ball are just better than Harrison. It doesn't mean that the Harrison won't score or maybe take the lead, but I think once Jasper gets the lead, I think they'll grind it out and make a big play here or there. I just don't see an upset this week.
Okay. This one comes from Mark in Washington. It's got two questions, okay? With three home games left to get to a bowl, what game do you feel is a trap game for IU? Minnesota, Illinois, or Purdue? And then also, do you feel an upset against Wisconsin or Ohio State?
Wow. I think Illinois might be the trap game. And I know that makes you mad, Joe, but I just don't see Purdue surprising IU. I think it's evident that Purdue has a good defense, but it's just tough on Purdue because their offense can't create enough opportunities or stay on the field long enough. It puts just too much pressure on the Purdue defense, and I think that's what IU's going to do, is just put so much pressure on the Purdue defense. Even though IU's defense will give Purdue some opportunities, it may not be enough, but I think Illinois could be the trap game. Ohio State, Wisconsin, you know, I don't know. First of all, I think both those teams better be ready defensively, and they better be ready offensively. You might say, well, Coach, that makes sense. You're supposed to be. Think about what I'm saying. IU can score. And if your defense doesn't come ready to play, IU can score. So what does that do? It puts a tremendous amount of pressure on your offense to score. And even though IU's defense is not great, they have shown periods throughout the year, even against good teams, that they can step up and get some outs. You know, it may not be three and out, it may be five and out, but they can do it. So if your defense, come in and you're not ready to defend IU the way you need to, they'll score more than they can score. And that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the offense. And I hope you understand what I'm saying there, because it absolutely makes sense, because Coach K speaks the truth. So Ohio State, Wisconsin, you're probably going to win in Bloomington, but you better come ready to play. Because if you don't come in defensively ready, IU's going to score more points than they normally would against you, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on your offense. And I got to tell you, Ohio State has not proven to be the juggernaut people like to say they are, and Wisconsin can stub their toe.
Okay, I've got two questions here I'm going to ask you so I can go prepare for the rant, okay? Now, first question is, what NFL teams have surprised you to this point? And the second question is, they want to know your favorite players that you coach, not talent-wise, but some of the kids that would just go do the little things. Ready?
Two good questions. You go get ready for the rant. We'll have Don Schulteis calling in, obviously, from Indianapolis, and Kurt Gucksell will join us. NFL-wise, I think Dallas in the last few weeks has surprised me. They've always been prone to making the mistakes down the stretch. Tony Romo has dialed back on that a little bit. The very, very poor start of the Giants has surprised me. I did not think that they were going to be an awesome team, but I certainly didn't think they'd be sitting at 1-6. I think there's something wrong there. I think that Eli Manning is injured, and he's not talking about it. And I also think that the Giants did not do a very good job of addressing needs on their defensive end. We all got to be happy for Kansas City. We all got to be happy for Coach Reed. We knew that he was an outstanding coach. It was the time to separate in Philadelphia. They didn't have the players. And you know, he'd been there a long time. And familiarity breeds contempt. You know, whether it's high school coaching, grade school coaching, whatever it is, after so many years, you better be winning, or you better hope people don't care, because after a while, everybody gets a little antsy and wants somebody new. And that's why some of the great high school coaches that I've known, they moved about every 5 years, 6 years. And still, I can name some names today of coaches that stay about 5 or 6 years, both on the basketball, football side, and then they move on. But that's tough to do when you have a family and you like the community. But those teams have surprised me. Minnesota, my gosh, they're horrible. Otherwise, it's going about the way I thought. Miami surprised me with their start, and, boy, they have just struggled lately. And then the last team that I questioned early in the year, they're 5-2, Cincinnati. They probably held serve a little more than I thought they would. As far as players that I've coached, boy, I've coached a lot of good ones. I had coached for 4 years, or part of 4 years, four guys that went on to be Indiana All-Stars, and a couple of them that have participated in the top 40 workout that did not get chosen. But I've had a lot of good players that came to work every day and did what they needed to do, whether they were happy with me or whether they liked their role on the team. They accepted the role and they did a great job. And Scott Hagen is one of them, played for me at Jasper. Ryan Ernie, you know, I've always told the story about Ryan. For those of you who don't know, he's the head girls coach at Jasper. There's a guy as a junior, I wasn't sure where he would fit as a senior. And everybody knows it's difficult when you have seniors and there's not a place for them. They say they're okay with it, but then the season gets going and they struggle with it, and they hear it at home, and they hear it from their buddies, and they hear it from their girlfriends, and all of a sudden, they're not the leader you need them to be. Ryan Ernie was everything that you needed. He came back better. He accepted his role. He became a defender that we couldn't do without. He knew the offense. He knew the defense. He knew where to step in. He got on the floor. He did all the things you needed to do, and he became a player that we just couldn't play without. It's a great story. I love that. Coaches aren't always correct on where the player will end up. But a lot of times it's up to the player. It's up to the individual. Are you willing to accept your role, and are you willing to do everything you need to do in order to give the coach a reason not to take you out of the game or give the coach every reason he needs to play you? And that isn't always the guy who scores. It's the guy who rebounds. It's the guy who plays defense. It's the guy who gets where he's supposed to be on the floor. It's the guy that makes sure that defensively his guy's not scoring. He's blocking out. He's doing all the little things that don't show up statistically, that don't show up in the wins column, that don't get the press in the newspaper, that they don't talk about on the talk show or the Saturday morning sports, but they're the guys that make things happen. And there's so many others at Washington Catholic. I had a number of guys. He didn't get to play all of his senior year because he got hurt. Andy Weber, Brett Smith, Travis Madison. I can go on with a lot of guys who weren't always the statistical leaders, but, boy, you had to have them. And you know where you needed them even more, not just in the game? Practice. Practice to get better. Because if guys don't bring it in practice, they don't push the better players, the skilled players, to get better. And that's one thing like a Scott Hagen and would do and Ryan Ernie would do. They would come and they would get after it in practice. And they would make the Michael Lewis's work harder. They would make the Nick Blessingers, who was a good player, great kid in practice. They would make the Jared Brosmers, who's now a chiropractor in Jasper, work harder. They were critical to us succeeding in the game because they could score things. But if they didn't get it in practice, they weren't going to be good enough come Friday, Saturday, Tuesday night at the sectional, whatever it might be. So, yeah, been a lot of good players, and that's a great question. And I could talk about 15 or 20 more young men if we had the time. And maybe we will sometime. Hey, thanks a lot for that question, because hey, those are things we need to talk about.
Hey, Coach, we do have one person we'd like to just say something real quick. We do have another special event coming up in Jasper. I want to give him a second to say something about it. It's our good friend, Slick Weber. Slick, are you there with us?
Yes, I am. How you guys doing, Coach? How you doing?
Great to have you, Slick.
Pardon me?
Great to have you on the show, buddy.
Yeah, hey, I just want to kind of forewarn all those Jasper Wildcat basketball fans out there that Friday night, December 13th, will be the actual 100th anniversary of the first Jasper High School basketball game. And Coach Gable and Andy Noblet and some others are spearheading an effort to make that a very special night. Some of the things that are preliminarily planned are in the cafeteria there in the new gym that overlooks the new gym. They're going to have a walk-through museum with videos and pictures from every era. And also after the game, they're going to have a get together out at the Dubois County Museum that all fans and players are invited to. And I obviously they'll have some introduction of some of the great ones that hopefully will make it back for that night. So I just want everybody to mark their calendars because it should be a great night of Jasper Wildcat basketball and reminisce of some old stories. So I appreciate you letting me tell it, you guys, okay?
Well, Slick, we're glad you kept us informed on this, but more than anything, Slick, you know cold weather's here, that basketball's starting to bounce in the gym, and we'll be probably talking with you some hoop stories before we're done this year.
Oh, I would love that. You know me, I could always talk Jasper basketball or any basketball as far as that goes. But I think, doesn't IU start this Saturday night, Coach? Don't they have a game Saturday night?
Do they?
Exhibition. I think they play USI. I might be wrong on that. I thought somebody told me that. Maybe that's
they may
Saturday.
Have
yes,
that coming up. I don't know.
No, it's Saturday night. They play USI in an exhibition game. Yep. Yep. That's what I told you.
Who are you picking in that game?
You know what? USI has always had a hell of a program. You know that. But I think you got to take that Big Ten IU. I know they might be a little down this year, but they may surprise some people. But anyway, tell those people to mark those calendars and you keep reminding people. That'd be great, Kenny. I know you already texted me and told me you'd do anything you can to make that night special, and we really appreciate that. Okay, buddy?
Well, we love the Cats. We love high school basketball. It's an important part of the tradition of Indiana, and it's an important part to community. So thanks for coming on, Slick, and giving us the heads up.
Keep up the good work, guys. I appreciate your show. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Hey, Coach.
Always nice to hear from, isn't it, Joe?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And we'll use that as our commercial break. So let's start the rant. We're joined by Kurt Duxell and by Don Schulteis, and let's go.
We're ranting.
That's the topic.
And we've got Kurt, and we've got Don on, and let's just start. We've got IU starting their exhibition season. Kurt, what about the Hoosiers?
Hey, how's it going today?
It is cold.
That's a really nice way to spend a Friday night with football, being cold.
You probably got a Southridge matching up tonight?
They play at Tell City. It'll be really good.
And how did Tell City end up their season?
Tell City beat Forest Park last week.
Okay.
Become 6-3 on the season.
And probably the first time in a long, long time that Tell City's had a 6-3 season.
Yeah, they're really good. So that should be a good game. It was a three-point game earlier in the season. So looking forward to that tonight.
Do we have a healthy Southridge Raider team, Connor Craig, the rest of those guys? Are they healthy and ready to go?
Yeah, they're healthy and ready to go. So see what they can do here in week one, because this is when it all starts, and it's weird because after tonight the whole field gets lopped in half. And, you know, that's hard. You know, it's kind of hard to believe. You go through these 9 weeks and everybody plays every Friday night, and it's a full slate, and you look at the scores, and it takes up a lot of space in the paper, or it takes a long time to read. But, you know, it's like this in every sport. You know, half the field goes home after the first night of football. So that's what's going to take place tonight.
Let's digress just a little bit. A big, big game last weekend that decided the PAC Conference Championship. It's one we talked about. You've seen the history of that game for a long time. Gibson Southern, Southridge. Tell me what surprised you or affirmed your thoughts about Gibson Southern.
Well, they were very good. They're the best team I've seen on live and on video. Their offense and the defensive lines were unbelievable, and I didn't know if they would be, and they were. They were outstanding. They ran the ball better than I thought they would. They have two or three backs that they rotate in and out. The sophomore quarterback, Sellers, who was actually a lineman coming up through the ranks, a left-hander, really good, really tough, gets them in the right places. And, you know, it was a great game. It was 31-21, 14-7 at the half. Southridge was down 14-0, but scored with like 3 seconds to go in the half, and then had the football to start the second half. And Coach Buning thought that may have been where the game got away from Southridge a little bit. If they could have put something together on that first drive of the second half, it may have been a closer game. It still was close, but Gibson Southern was better last Friday night. They were outstanding. I was totally impressed the way they were played, the way they were set up, the way they were coached, and it's going to take a good team to beat them. They've got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and they sit in a pretty good sectional in 3A. They with Bossy and Memorial Heritage Hills, of course, is in there as well. I really did. As I watched listened to the call of the game, Kurt, I picked you up on the radio. I felt like that this was a Gibson Southern team that you looked at versus the previous years and said, what you've just confirmed to us, this is a team that's got all the pieces it needs to move forward.
Well, I think so, because they're so, I mean, they're so strong and physical. And I think when they need to run it, they'll be able to run it. When they need to throw it and catch some people off guard, I think they can do that too. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they go through the season or through the tournament.
Okay, real quickly, before we jump into some college basketball, Southridge goes to Tell City. Any concerns that you have? I mean, obviously, Tell City's a much better team than they've been in the past. Coach George has them hitting on all cylinders. They're pretty excited in Tell City, I can tell you that, just talking to some people over there when I visited Tell City Pretzel Company a couple weeks ago. This Raider team, I think, is a pretty solid team as well. I think it's going to be a tall order for Tell City to come out. But when you look at this game, give me some thoughts as far as what advantages Southridge may have, what disadvantages may be there.
Well, I think Southridge will be able to wear on them on the offensive line. But Tell City, they've got a really good defense. And in the first game, Tell City hit Southridge for three plays for 130 yards, and they were big plays. And that's where Tell City got their points. Other than that, they really didn't do much. But obviously those points and those plays count. So that's something Southridge is going to have to try to shut off this time. And when you talk about Tell City, they've got Elliot Brown, who's a state sprinter, track guy, and he's probably the fastest guy in southwestern Indiana. And the Raiders did a good job of, you know, creating an edge and not letting him get loose. But, again, Tell City hit him a couple of big pass plays. And, again, you know, as a coach, you can't take away everything. And they were really looking at Brown and gave up a couple of cheap pass plays. But that's what I'm going to look for tonight, to see if Southridge can control that Tell City running game. And I think they can do that and not have the defensive breakdowns in the secondary. I think they'll have their way tonight. But that being said, the city's, you know, obviously a really good team.
Yeah, that'll be a packed house at Tell City, and it'll be a lot of fun. It's great. Tell City's a great little town, and I know we used to call them when they had the rivalry with Jasper, we always called them the River Rats. But it's great to see at least part of their athletic program coming back up. The city fell on some hard times and lost a lot of its population, but it's great to see them playing well, and I know they're excited there. I'm just going to touch on Class A. There's a pretty good team up in Linton that continues to win year in and year out. Linton Stockton 9-0 again this year. Of course, Perry Central's got a solid team again. We don't want to leave any of those people out. Our communities out, they've all got good teams. Let's jump over to college basketball. A little bit earlier on the show, I mentioned the USA Today preseason poll was out, top 25. Don Schulteis is with us. Don, sitting at the top is that ugly blue Kentucky. does a team that's 21-12 showed no guard play, a lack of leadership, even though they got some good players coming in, is this a team that should get the nod at number one?
Absolutely not. I mean, nobody – their starting five is probably going to be all freshmen again that have not even played a college game. And I suspect that within the first few weeks of the season, I mean the main season, when they play some tougher competition, that's going to change over because, you know, there are a lot of talented freshmen at Kentucky. But it's a different game. They're going to have to be playing at a different level. And if it was my vote, I would be going with either Michigan State. Probably Louisville is the number one team based on what they've done last year and who they've got coming back and that kind of thing. And Pitino, obviously, great coach. So I think it's all about the Kentucky mystique, and Coach Cal is one of the best branders there is with its program, and I think it's ridiculous to vote them number one coming in with a young team.
Don, did you say Kentucky mystique or Kentucky stink? What'd you say there? I want to make sure.
I'll just leave that to anybody's imagination.
Hey, Kurt, you know, Don's given his ideas on Kentucky. If you're Louisville, and I know Rick Pitino doesn't care, maybe he does a little inside because it just crawls at him, but you never say it. But Louisville, reigning national championship, pretty solid team coming back. Kentucky, even though they've got talent coming in, they still don't have anybody that has shown they can run the team out on the floor. I know it's just a preseason poll, but does Louisville kind of get disrespected with this?
Oh, I think so, too, and it just adds to the fervor for the late December game that they have. And, you know, and Cupertino and Calipari always sniping back and forth because Louisville, you know, brands themselves as, you know, Louisville first. It's all about the, you know, the institution and the program where, you know, Cal has come out and said, you know, it's players first and, you know, our job is to get guys to the NBA. And that's the biggest myth in sports, that he does something to turn those guys into first-round picks because they come there that already. But Big Blue Nation, BBN as they like to call themselves, they've bought into the Cal, you know, we're going to you know, turn these guys into millionaires just because of what we do, but that's a bunch of crap. But I agree with Donnie. It's a college game is so much different. But it amazes me, though, the people, and no matter who you talk to, it's like this 100% chance of rain with the weather forecasters. It's going to happen, and we know it's going to happen. The people that know college basketball, they say this team cannot miss. That's hard for me to believe as a college basketball follower or a guy that I think knows a little bit about it to say it's not a done deal. But the people that know or supposedly know say that it can't go wrong. And they're going to have to show it to me, but these people that make their living predicting this stuff or talking about this stuff or analyzing this stuff say the same thing, that it can't go wrong because of how talented those guys are. But, I mean...
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I get tired of. You know, Coach Cal, and you kind of mentioned it a little bit, and Don mentioned it, I think Coach Cal took his eye off the ball, to use a sports analogy, last year. I think he got caught up in what a great creator of talent he was. I agree, the talent already came. I think where he lost, took his eye off the ball was he didn't recruit the positions he needed to recruit. I mean, they literally had no one to run the show out there, and it proved how important guard play is. Now, you got to have talent. You got to have inside play, shot block. You got to have those things. Don't get me wrong. But you've got to have guard play. And until they show me they've got guard play, I don't see how they can be number one.
Well, he watched this Ryan Harrell kid practice all year, and that was going to be the guy that was going to be the point guard. And I can't imagine a guy of his stature, his coaching ability, because he is a good coach, to swing and miss on evaluation as much as he knows about point guards. Because that Harrell was a total disaster, at least for that team. Maybe, again, if he's surrounded by some veterans or whatever. But with that mix, he was a disaster, and he couldn't have been more wrong on that evaluation. So, but I guess with the Harrison twins and, you know, Jones and all these guys that they got coming in, it's going to be a totally different thing. And even Kentucky fans will say, well, these guys that they brought in last year – aren't at the level these guys were, and that's why they were in the NIT and got beat by Bob Morris. But they're going to have to show. I mean, again, I'm looking forward to them going up against Michigan State or going up against some of these good teams that they're going to play.
Me too. At the beginning of the year, the Kentucky fans weren't saying it. They were saying, oh, we got the greatest recruiting class going. But, Don, you know this. Individually, if you got the ball in your hands and you're one-on-one, you might be. YouTube videos, when you're running up and down the floor and nobody's playing defense, you might be. But if you can't get the ball into those guys, if they aren't able to make a move or find the open man, you don't have anything better than just a nice one-on-one team.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that we forget is how are these guys going to mesh into and form the chemistry that you need to win championships and to go undefeated or compete with these teams. You know, the other teams like the Louisville's and the Michigan States and other top-rated programs are not going to go, oh, it's Kentucky, we're second to them, we're going to step aside. They are going to be out for blood, and these guys are going to, I don't care if they're the best freshmen in the land, if they don't step up and play to that level, when they end up playing the good teams, the competitive programs, they're going to get their jaws smacked pretty darn hard. And
you know the thing about it is, Don, you said it best. They may be the best freshmen in the land, but they're just freshmen. And believe me, a freshman to a sophomore to a junior, it's totally different. And I know it's the one-and-done era, although I think we're starting to see that that doesn't always work. I know Coach Cal's a great coach. I know that. I mean, he's a great recruiter, and he does a good job on the floor. But Coach Wooden always started with a good guard and a center. You got to have guys that can get you the ball and run your offense. I know Billy Somm knows Coach Cal a little bit. Next time we have Bill on, we might have to get you all guys on, bring him on at the same time, talk a little bit about Coach Cal. Don, three teams from the Big Ten in this preseason top ten. Michigan State, number two. I don't know how surprised you are at it. Also, Michigan at 9, Ohio State 10. Your thoughts on Michigan State starting at number 2 and Michigan and Ohio State being in that top 10?
Well, I think with Michigan State, whether they're number 2 or number 5 or number 7 or number 3, I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it comes together, but they're definitely one of the cream of the crop, all three of those programs, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State. I would say if any of the Big Ten teams are going to be in the top, you know, 25 in preseason, it'd be those teams. I mean, Michigan just finished runner-up. I know they lost a couple of key players, but they're doing a heck of a job bringing in talent. I know they're all over the top prospects here in the Indy area, as is Michigan State. One of the interesting things as far as recruiting, you don't hear Ohio State as much in the mix, at least in with some of the top Indiana players. So it'll be interesting going forward to see what Thad Matta does and how he compensates. But he's getting top players, and so yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I think, you know, for all the IU fans, IU's going to struggle this year. I mean, the word is up here that IU has got some real problems shooting the ball from outside. And whether that is true or not, I guess we'll see Saturday night when they play the Screaming Eagles from USI to see who steps up and starts being able to score. And you know, so getting back to your question, those top three, I think are legit, and I think Michigan State's the better of the three.
Kurt, preseason, Indiana's 24. They got the Screaming Eagles. Who are you picking in that game, Kurt? The Screaming Eagles or the Hoosiers?
I think I'll go with the Hoosiers, although Southern Indiana's going to be really good this year. So that's
Kurt,
kind of a cool
I gotta
game.
Ask you,
yeah.
I got to ask you about the Hoosiers. And again, I don't want to come off, and I'm going to come off this way, as kind of being a little anti. But
Coach, you've always
this,
been anti-Tom Creed, so
this
just come
mix,
off
the mix
and say
of this
it.
Team, I don't know. I don't know if I get it.
When Donnie said that they were going to be a bad shooting team, I think in this day and age, that's you can't have that. How in the world? Everybody's got these shooters all over the place, and that's your fault if that's what the case is, or you misevaluated, or you did something. So. I mean, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the new guys play. That's always the case in every new team. But I don't know how they're going to be. And that's – I mean, you talk about the guys they lost. I mean, not just Victor and Zeller, but, I mean, Holv. I mean, he was a great player for that team. So
yeah, what they say, Kurt, that they lost 80% of their scoring with the guys that graduated and went to the pros. So that's going to be – that's a huge hole to fill, and you've got relatively immature or unseasoned players, aside from Will Sheehy and maybe Yogi Ferrell, trying to fill the void. And it's going to – they're going to go through some growing pains.
Well, you've got to wonder, guys, did this vaunted group of freshmen that came in last year – did they miss the mark? Were they just YouTube video stars? I don't know. I really question it. And Kurt, before we end up the show and we're coming down to about the end, they can't seem to get recruits in now. Are we waiting? What's going on? We just haven't signed anybody.
Well, I think that's part of the, you know, we're going to go out there with this big net and we're going to look at everybody. We're going to chase every great player there is, and if you come up empty or this guy doesn't want to go there because they're recruiting two other guys at that position, I think that's hurt them a little bit. It sounds great that you're going after all these guys, but you better get some of those guys, and you better assure some of the guys you're recruiting that you really want them and you're just not broad brushing them. And kids want to play, and I think sometimes even kids with egos that think, I'll play no matter who's coming, I think they look around to see who else these teams are recruiting. I think that's kind of hurt Indiana a little bit too. But, it looks like Blewett's going to slip through their hands because of some different things that they, on a recruiting front, that they mishandled. And I don't know. I mean, that's my take on it. I just think that, when you really don't say, hey, this is going to be our philosophy, and this is how we're going to recruit, and we want you, and this is why we want you, because we need a shooting guard or we need a post player, instead of, hey, we think you're athletic and we think that you can do some things, but we're also going to recruit five other guys at your position. I think sometimes that it sounds great when you're in the fray for those guys, but maybe those players and those coaches and those AAU guys that have coached these guys don't like that recruiting philosophy. I heard
James Blackman Jr. and Jaquan Lyles is going to be in the crowd on Saturday. They're coming in for a visit. So they're back trying to recruit those guys. I guess they never really let Blackman go, but, it'll be interesting.
That makes me wonder. And that's a done deal. To Kurt's point, what? Social media between these players, they know if they're going into be the guy or they're going in to have to compete against three others. I just think that it's just changed.
Do you think Blackman's going to go anywhere but Kentucky?
No, I think he's Kentucky bound. I think he's playing with the IU fans and Coach Green.
And my next question, knowing what we know about the other guy that's jumping around, do they really need a guy like him too?
I think that that shows maybe a little desperation on the Hoosiers' part. And Don, I love Tom Crean. I think he's a great recruiter. I wouldn't mind working for him. So get off my case on that. Before we leave, guys, real quickly, it's the General's birthday, and thank you for reminding us, Don Schulteis. From both of you, one snippet or thought about the General. Start with you, Don.
Well, I just think that his no-nonsense approach to basketball was just revolutionary at the time. It fit those times. I think that, as things change, maybe not so much, but he was a legend. And when I grew up watching the Hoosiers in the 70s and 80s, it was just, he did a lot of interesting things off the court, but boy, his teams competed. And, that's what you got to do to be a major force in college basketball. You got to compete.
Kurt?
No, just the way he did, the stamp he put on the game, it seemed like he did a lot of things that, people are still doing today as far as offense and defense and, the way, he turned a state into basketball and how high school people looked at things and how they coached their guys and how kids wanted to play and wanted to go there. And just, we can talk all day about his impact and some of the crazy stuff he's done, but that's the thing I think about the most, how he impacted the state of Indiana, to just follow him and sometimes blindly to a fault.
Don, will you be in the stands for the Hoosiers and USI?
No, I'll be listening to Don Fisher, who's a former guest of your show, tomorrow night. I think it starts at like 7 o'clock, so I'll be listening to it on the radio.
All right, we're going to end up this week of the Coach K and Joe show. Hey, JoJo, take us home, buddy.
Yes, sir. Okay, first of all, you never asked me about Bob Knight. Kind of felt hurt about that. But
Joe, there's a reason I didn't ask.
Actually, in retrospect, after he's gone, and just this, I guess just the overall scumminess of college sports these days, you come to appreciate a man like Robert Montgomery Knight, even as a Boilermaker. Because, yeah, he did do some stupid things, but you always knew he was doing everything 100%. The way it was supposed to be done. So,
yeah,
so
Joe. Remember when he brought the donkey on his show on Sunday morning,
and that's the kind of things that just fueled the flames and made it fun. It was a blast. you know. So, but hey, I'll tell you what, guys, another great show. Another. Another great show, and Don and Kurt, thanks for joining us. And I'll tell you what, I'm Joe Milligan signing off for Coach K and Schulteis. Join us next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.